This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about channel marketing in calendar weeks 17 and 18. Frenis is a B2B market research partner helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description. If you look at the data right now, 57% of B2B companies are sitting in cloud marketplaces.
Yeah.
But like less than 5% of their revenue is actually coming from them. Think about that gap for a second. We are treating these, you know, trillion-dollar hyperscaler ecosystems like passive Amazon.com storefronts.
Right, just sitting there.
Yeah. And then we're wondering why the pipeline is totally dry. So today, we are cutting through the noise. We're doing a deep dive into the top channel marketing trends across LinkedIn from the past couple of weeks.
And this is really a zero-fluff mission for you guys listening. We're unpacking a massive shift. Partner ecosystems are just, they're rapidly moving away from those old relationship-driven models.
Moving entirely toward revenue infrastructure models. Which brings us to our first theme, right? Co-sell as revenue infrastructure. I mean, co-sell is easily the biggest buzzword in B2B right now.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone says they do it.
Everyone claims it. But internally, it's often a total mess. I tend to think of modern co-selling like a high-stakes relay race. You can spend millions recruiting the absolute fastest runner.
The top-tier partners.
Exactly. The most aggressive direct sales reps. But if you haven't actually practiced the baton pass, it doesn't matter how fast they run. The baton just hits the floor.
Or drops, yeah.
And the baton isn't just a warm intro anymore, right? It's a massive data payload.
It is. It's the account context, the pricing history. And this aligns perfectly with something Orlando Nato posted recently. He argued that moving to a partner-led go-to-market doesn't actually create new gaps in your organization.
Wait, what does it do then?
It relentlessly exposes the gaps that were already there.
Oh, wow. So it's essentially a stress test for your entire revenue operations.
A brutal one. Like, if your marketing team isn't talking to your sales ops team about attribution, a partner deal is going to immediately highlight that fracture.
Right.
It forces you to coordinate across silos.
Mm.
And, you know, Sugata Sanyal pointed out that co-sell programs usually fail because they miss absolute structural basics.
Like what?
Well, two things. First, trusted account data. If your team is still using, like, manual spreadsheets to map accounts, your data is stale the exact second you hit save.
Yeah, you need live API overlap.
Exactly. But the second piece Sugata mentioned is the one that really dictates behavior. Comp and neutral incentives.
Oh, compensation math. That's the real driver.
Always. If your direct account executive gets, say, 10% on a direct deal, but only 5% if a partner is involved,
they are going to route around that partner every single time.
Every time. Because the direct rep views the partner as a tax on their income. They aren't being malicious. They're acting rationally based on the math you gave them.
Even if the partner could close it faster, which is crazy.
Yeah. So a comp neutral policy isn't just a nice cultural perk. It's a mandatory requirement.
But, okay, even if you fix the comp structure, the operational stuff can still kill you.
Hmm.
Barrett King had this really brilliant warning about this.
SLA warning, right.
Yeah. You recruit the partner, you fix the comp, the rep is motivated, and then your direct sales team unintentionally suffocates the deal because they don't have a service-level agreement.
It's a silent killer.
Totally. Barrett advocates for a strict 48-hour SLA. If a partner brings you a warm lead, you know, risking their own reputation, they need a documented response in 2 days.
And you need a rules of engagement document, too.
Yes. Who sends the calendar invite? Does the partner stay on the call? If you don't define that, the handoff feels like a hostile takeover to the customer.
And that partner will never, ever bring you into an account again. They'll protect their client over your software.
So let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
If internal co-selling is this painful, like rewiring CRM data, changing compensation, rigid SLAs, why are we doing this? Why not just hire more direct reps?
Greg Portnoy shared some data that answers that definitively. When co-selling is actually executed properly, it delivers 80% larger deal sizes.
80%.
80%.
Mm-hmm.
And 46% shorter sales cycles.
So you're basically cutting the sales cycle in half and doubling the deal value.
Exactly. You just can't get those metrics through cold outbound anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires a mindset shift. Rob Moyer captured this quote. He said, companies need to treat co-selling as a distinct coachable skill.
Not just a feels in Salesforce.
Right. Most teams just put a co-sell checkbox in the CRM and assume the job is done. But to win, you have to train for it like you train for objection handling.
Okay, so let's say you do all that internal work, you fix the math, you train the team, you still have to send those deals somewhere to transact.
Which brings us to the cloud marketplaces.
Exactly. Theme two, marketplace monetization. Because like Ty Radigan said, 57% of companies are in there, but barely driving any revenue. It feels like marketers are misreading how these platforms work.
They're treating AWS and Azure like a digital shopping mall.
Yeah.
Like foot traffic just magically turns into pipeline.
Yeah. Just set up the passive storefront and wait.
And Kuiang Luo pointed this out about AWS Marketplace. Startups get their listing approved and just sit there. But AWS Marketplace is infrastructure. It is not a sales channel.
Let's double click on that. What's the practical difference for a marketer? Infrastructure versus sales channel.
So a sales channel implies the platform brings buyers to you. Infrastructure means the platform provides the roads, but, you know, you still have to drive the car.
Right. You have to connect the CRM.
Yeah. Connect the CRM via API, route custom negotiated contracts through an AWS private offer. If you don't wire your go-to-market into that billing infrastructure, the listing does nothing.
Penny Vanderpool saw the exact same thing over in the Azure ecosystem. Software vendors launch an app and it just sits dormant. But Benny's data shows that partners running active co-sell motions grow 51% faster.
Because they're using the marketplace as the transactional vehicle at the end of a human campaign.
Right. Which connects to Pete Zaris's concept of the who's who in the AWS zoo.
Oh, I love that post.
It's so good.
Yeah.
He explains that AWS Partner Success Managers, the PSMs, they are not relationship builders anymore. Marketers try to take them to lunch to get introductions.
Which is completely useless now. They don't have the bandwidth to be your BDRs. PSMs are load balancers. They want to scale proven motions.
So what does a proven motion actually look like?
It means bringing them a documented history of co-sell wins. A pristine profile, sure. Mm. But mostly you need a repeatable play. Your team already closed. You show them the math. We ran this, closed three accounts, drove this much consumption, and they will scale it.
They amplify what works. They don't invent your value prop.
Exactly. And Joe Cicero said, Microsoft sellers operate the exact same way. They don't want a 20-minute meeting about your founder's story.
They want to hit their quota.
Right. They want to know how your platform story helps them drive Azure consumption or Microsoft 365 seats.
Well, speaking of hyperscaler incentives, right now, all of that leads to one place. Theme three, Microsoft ecosystem signals and AI.
Oh, yeah. The hyperscalers are desperately trying to load balance AI across the enterprise.
And the rules of ecosystem credibility are changing fast. Diego Rodriguez highlighted this with the launch of Microsoft 365 E7 and Agent 365.
The market has matured so quickly there.
Right. Diego noted, we're past the does this AI actually work phase. We are firmly in the how do we govern this phase. CIOs are terrified of data leaks. So the opportunity for partners is governance accelerators, managed AI ops.
And the window to establish yourself there is closing. Arpan Chowdhury warned about this with the Anthropic ecosystem. Systems integrators are waiting to see what happens, but Arpan argues you have to secure a lighthouse deployment introduction now.
Not just a proof of concept.
No, proof of concept is a sandbox.
Yeah.
A lighthouse means a live, paying enterprise client getting a measurable business outcome. Without that, your co-sell story is just theoretical.
Okay, every tech provider on LinkedIn claims to be an AI governance expert right now. How do you actually prove your credibility to Microsoft so you don't get lost in the noise?
You have to submit to their new auditing frameworks. Yousef Ali brought up the new Microsoft Support Services designation. It is a very harsh filter.
It's not just pits for a gold badge anymore.
Not at all. You need a CSAT score of at least 4.2 out of 5 from 30 distinct enterprise customers. Plus, independent third-party audits of your tech and support resolution rates.
That is heavy. That requires an insane customer success operation.
It does. And Microsoft is making that designation a hard filter in the marketplace soon. Buyers will just toggle a switch to only see audited partners. If you haven't done the work, you face a total visibility wipeout.
A total visibility wipeout. That is terrifying.
It really is.
And speaking of vanishing, Rob Fegan raised this massive red flag about broken attribution. He pointed out partners are doing the heavy lifting, influencing deals, and leaving six-figure incentive checks completely unclaimed.
Because the automated systems literally don't know they exist.
Yes. Rob said it's because the partner's RevOps team fails to file the CPR, the claiming partner of record. Like, if you influence a Microsoft 365 deployment, you have to digitally link your partner ID to their Azure tenant ID via API.
And if that linkage breaks, the domino effect is catastrophic. The Microsoft rep doesn't get quota relief, so they hate you. You don't get points for the support services designation.
And the money just vanishes. You're a ghost in the machine. Which honestly forces us to look at the profile of the person running this whole thing.
It has to change entirely.
It does. Theme 4, partner leadership evolution. Richard Steves argued that the channel account manager role is shifting from a relationship manager to a revenue architect.
Running a 2015 playbook in a 2026 GTM engine just gets you fired.
You can't just buy coffees and present slide decks anymore. And Brandon Sizemore added to this. He said, measuring partnership revenue on manual spreadsheets is fundamentally a RevOps problem.
Right. You're holding partner leaders accountable for revenue, but they don't own the systems that track it.
They're cross-referencing Slack messages with CRM notes. It's absurd.
And that systemic failure is why Craig Booth noted that average partner leaders last less than 24 months. They are operating inside unstructured systems that just cannot produce predictable performance. Opportunistic partnering is dead.
But let me challenge that. What if the RevOps is solid? The attribution works, the portal is clean. What if the partners just aren't engaging? Like, they're inactive.
Well, Dinara B and Blake Williams had a great conversation about this. They said, your partners aren't inactive. They're just bidding on someone else's program.
Ouch. They're matching your ideal customer profile. They're just not mentioning your name.
Exactly. Because most vendors only incentivize the closed one deal. But the heavy lifting, the intel gathering, the warm intro that happens mid-funnel,
yeah.
If you don't reward that behavior, they'll go to a vendor who does.
So looking at all this, the complex data models, the SLAs, the AI audits, how does a B2B marketer pull this together without losing their mind?
I think Harold Horgan's square peg theory is the best way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
He says 90% of channel partnerships fail because vendors build process where they should have built trust first.
What's the square peg in this?
The square peg is the vendor's rigid internal process. The mandatory portal logins, the certifications. Mm-hmm. The round hole is the partner's actual daily workflow. Vendors try to force the peg with a hammer by adding more process.
Which just feels like micromanagement.
Yeah, and the partners mentally check out. Harold points out that discretionary effort, a partner's willingness to invest their political capital into your product, is the only currency that actually produces revenue.
Discretionary effort. You really can't force a partner to care with a CRM dashboard. You know, we've spent this whole deep dive in the operational weeds, CPOR, private offers, APIs, but at the end of the day, with AI automating account mapping and marketplaces automating the transaction, the mechanical parts of marketing are becoming totally commoditized. So the only true competitive moat left for B2B professionals is human trust. How are you earning your partner's trust before the deal even exists? That's something you really have to think about.
That is absolutely the dividing line right there.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, AI, and B2B marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Thanks so much for tuning into this deep dive, everyone. Make sure to subscribe.